Scene 5 of The Soul's Probation. A landscape with Balda's lonely cottage. Mood of evening. Felicia Balda, Capacius, then Felix Balda, later Johannes and his double, then Lucifer and Arman. Capacius enters and comes toward Felicia, who is sitting on a bench in front of her cottage. May your old friend walk up and rest a little while with you. Now more than ever does he feel in need of what he's found so often at your house. Felicia. When I could see you coming in the distance, your weary steps foretold, and near at hand your eye reveals it too, that sorrow dwells within your soul today. Capacius, sitting down. To bring much gaiety into your home was never possible for me. Today I ask for special patience when, with a restless heart, I trespass on this peaceful spot. Felicia. You've been so gladly welcomed here at times when hardly anyone came near our house, and now, despite events that came between us, you have remained our friend, though many people now are looking up this lonely place of ours. Capacius. Then is it true what I have heard, that our dear Felix, so taciturn till now, has in these days become a much sought-after man? Felicia. Ah, yes, good Felix, used to shut us off from all the world. Now he is forced to talk to many people. His duty, this new life, appears to be to him. In former days he wanted to confide to his own inner self alone what woods and cliffs revealed to him of spirit deeds and nature's power. Besides, it seemed to no one else worth knowing. How much the times indeed have changed! Right many people now listen greedily to what my Felix reveals to them about his knowledge, which in the past they found most foolish. And when my dearest husband... Felix enters from the house. For hours on end must talk. I really long for those old quiet days. At that time he had pointed out so earnestly that only in the silent heart the soul should bear the spirit gifts bestowed on it in grace from godly realms. He called him traitor to the spirit world, whoever would reveal it to a hearing that opened only to the world of sense. Felix Balda. Felicia finds it hard to reconcile herself to our completely altered life. She once complained about our loneliness, and now complains no less when many a day we have few hours to ourselves. Capacius. And what has moved you to receive and welcome people in your secluded home? Felix. Obediently I followed spirit guidance that speaks within my heart when it demanded of me silence, and just as faithful to its call to speak, I shall now yield myself. The being of humanity transforms itself as earth existence gradually moves on. We are standing at a turning point of time. Some part of spirit knowledge must be unlocked for every man who wills to open mind and heart to it. I know my kind of speech has little of the form that counts today. The spirit life, they say, must be expressed with strictly logical thought structure, and this is lacking in my speech. They claim that genuine science, which should be based on firm foundations, cannot regard me otherwise than as a visionary soul who seeks a solitary road to wisdom and knows no more of science than of art. But others find it well worthwhile to peer into the tangle of my words, discovering things from time to time that can be grasped by common sense. I am a man who artlessly lets stream into his heart each revelation that may come to him. I do not know a knowing without words. When I hold converse in my inmost heart, when I take heed of nature round about me, there lives in me a knowledge that does not search for words. Speech is as closely bound to it as is his body's form to earthly man. A knowing which in such a way reveals itself from spirit worlds can be of service also to men who do not understand it. So everyone's allowed to come to me who will attend to what I have to say. I know full well that curiosity and other poorer reasons bring some people here. Yet if in this time now on earth such people's souls are not yet stirred, the good has been implanted and will work on in them. Capacius, I'd like to say to you quite frankly, for many years I have respected you, yet up to now the sense of your strange words is closed to me as well. Felix, it will unlock itself to you most certainly. You strive with noble heart and spirit. The time will come when you will hear the voice of truth. Just look what rich endowments man has, as image of the kingdoms of the worlds. His head, it is the heaven's mirror image, and through his limbs work spirits of the spheres. Within his breast the beings of the earth are moving, and stemmed against them all, there wrestle mightily the demons of the province of the moon, who have to cross the spirit being's aims. What as a human being stands before us? What as a soul we take in livingly? What as a spirit shines upon us, has been envisioned by the gods from all eternity? Their purpose was to bring together the forces out of all the worlds, which thus united shape the human form. Capacius, I'm almost frightened by this word, which boldly would consider the human being the achievement of the gods. Felix, yes, therefore high humility is needed by him who would attain to spirit knowledge. For him who strives to know himself in arrogance and vanity, the gates of wisdom do not open. Felix returns to the house. Capacius, now help me, dear Felicia, as so often you've done before, so that my soul may turn itself to pictures and is able, and warmed by living images, to grasp these words as rightly they should be. Felicia, my Felix has repeated frequently to me the words he spoke just now, and they released out of my heart a picture, which I've often told myself I should relate to you. Capacius, do so, dear friend. I long for the refreshment that flows out of your picture treasury. Felicia, so be it. Once upon a time there was a boy who lived, the only child of a poor forester, within a woodland solitude. He knew, besides his parents, hardly any other people. His build was slender, his skin almost transparent. One could look long into his eyes. They treasured deepest spirit wonders. And though indeed few people entered the circle of his life, he never was in need of friends. When in the nearby mountains the golden sunlight glowed and glimmered, the boy's rapt, musing eye drew forth the spirit gold into his soul, until his heart resembled the morning brightness of the sun. But when, through darkening clouds, the morning sun rays could not pierce, and dreariness hung over mountain heights, the boy's eye too grew dull, a mood of sadness filled his heart. The spirit weaving of his narrow world took hold of him so fully that it was no less strange to him than were his body and his limbs. The trees and flowers of the woods were all his friends. There spoke to him from crown and calyx and from the lofty treetops spirit beings, and what they whispered he could understand. Such wondrous things of worlds unknown unlocked themselves before the boy whenever his soul conversed with what most people would regard as lifeless. At evening, his anxious parents from time to time missed their beloved child. The boy was at a spot nearby where from the rocks a spring burst forth, and water drops, dispersing thousandfold, were scattered over stones. When moonlight's silver glance in sparkling colors sorcery was mirrored in the water's misty spray, the boy could sit for hours on end beside the rock-born spring. And figures, formed by spirit magic, arose before his youthful vision in rushing water and in moonlight's glimmer. They grew into three women's forms who told him of those things toward which his soul's desire was turned. And when, upon a gentle summer night, the boy was sitting at the spring again, one woman of the three caught up a myriad of drops out of the glittering spray and gave them to the second woman. She fashioned from the tiny drops a chalice with a silver gleam and passed it to the third. She filled it with the moonlight's silver rays and gave it to the boy, who had beheld all this with youthful inner sight. Now, in the night which followed this event, he dreamed that he was robbed by a fierce dragon of the chalice. After this night, the boy beheld just 3 times more the wonder of the spring. Henceforth the women came no more, although the boy sat musing beside the rock-born spring in moonlight's silver sheen. And when 360 weeks had run their course, 3 times, the boy had long become a man and left his parents' home in forest country to live in a strange city. One evening, tired from the day's hard toil, he pondered on what life had still in store for him, when suddenly he felt himself a boy, caught up and carried to his rock-born spring. Again he could behold the water women, and this time heard them speak. The first one said to him, "Remember me at any time you feel alone in life. I lure man's eye of soul to starry spaces and ethereal realms. And whosoever wills to feel me, I offer him the draught of hope in life out of my wonder goblet." And then the second spoke, "Do not forget me at the times when courage in your life is threatened. I lead man's yearning heart to depths of soul and up to spirit heights. And whosoever seeks his strength from me, for him I forge the steel of faith in life, shaped by my wonder hammer." The third one could be heard, "To me lift up your eye of spirit when your life's riddles overwhelm you. I spin the threads of thought that lead through labyrinths of life and the abyss of soul. And whosoever harbors trust in me, for him I weave the living rays of love upon my wonder loom." Thus it befell the man, and in the night that followed this he dreamed a dream. A savage dragon prowled in circles round about him, and yet could not come near him. He was protected from that dragon by the beings he had seen beside the rock-born spring, and who with him had left his home for this far distant place. Capacius, warm thanks to you, dear friend. I leave you with rich blessings. He rises and walks away. Felicia enters the house. Capacius, at some distance, alone, speaks as follows. "I feel how such a picture works on within my soul, bestowing health. How, to my thinking, it is able to restore the forces I have lost. The story was so simple that she told, and yet it stirs in me the powers of thought that bear me into unknown worlds. In this fair solitude I will indulge in dreaming. This has so often endowed my soul with thoughts that proved far better than many fruits of endless brooding." He goes down a path between the bushes and disappears. Johannes appears in deep contemplation in the same part of the forest glade. Was it a dream? Was it reality? I cannot bear what my friend said in gentle calmness, yet so firmly, about our separation. If I could only think that reasoning, antagonistic to the spirit, had set itself between us as a deceptive image. I cannot, will not follow the counsel that Maria gave to drown the voices in me that speaks, to drown the voice in me that speaks unceasingly. I love her. This love remains for me the only spring of action that I wish to know. What is all the creative urge to me? What is the outlook toward high spirit goals if they can rob me of the light illuminating my existence? Within this light I have to live. If it were taken from me, I'd wish for death through all eternity. I feel my strength is ebbing when I attempt to think. I'd have to follow paths no more illumined by her light. There weaves before my eyes a mist. It's shrouding in confusion, the marvels which this forest and these rocks had painted gloriously before my eyes. A wild dream rises out of the abyss. Oh, terribly it shakes me through and through. Away from me! I thirst for solitude, for it will let me keep the dreams that are my own. In them I still may yearn for what seems lost to me. It will not leave me, so I must flee from it. Feels himself fastened to the ground. What chains are these that hold me fettered to the ground? The double of Johannes Thomasius appears. Alas, whoever you may be, if human blood is flowing in your veins, or if alone as spirit you exist, leave me alone. Who are you? Has a demon thrust myself before myself? He will not go. It is the image of myself. Seems to be still stronger than is my being in itself. The devil. Maria, how I love you, near you. With beating heart, with feverish blood I am consumed. And when your eyes meet mine, hot waves pulse through me. And when you put your loving hand in mine, blissfulness pervades my limbs. Johannes. You phantom, woven out of vapor mist, you dare blaspheme the purest feelings of my heart? What weight of guilt is laid upon me that I must now perceive a lewd distortion of the love I look upon as holy? The devil. I listened to your words. I seemed to swallow them into my soul as message from the land of spirits. But more than by such revelations I was impelled to love your nearness. And when you spoke of paths of soul, there streamed through me a rapture that surges turbulently in the blood. The voice of conscience. So speaks, revealing, not yet concealing, from shine receding, in blood proceeding, the secret fire, fanning desire. The double, with somewhat altered voice. I cannot forsake you. You'll find me often at your side. I will not leave you till you have found the strength to shape me to a likeness of the being that you will some day be, but are not yet. In the illusion of your narrow self alone can you behold that likeness. Lucifer and Ahriman appear. Lucifer. O man, conquer yourself. O man, redeem me. You have defeated me in your soul heights, but I stay bound to you in being's depths. You'll always find me upon your path of life when you attempt completely to shield yourself from me. O man, conquer yourself. O man, redeem me. Ahriman. O man, embolden yourself. O man, experience me. You've gained for yourself the seeing of spirit beings. I had to spoil for you the quickening of your heart. Often, indeed, you'll suffer the hardest agony of soul if you'll not bend yourself to powers of mine. O man, embolden yourself. O man, experience me. Lucifer and Ahriman disappear, the devil also. Johannes goes further into the darkness of the forest in deep musing. Capacius reappears. From behind the thicket, he has followed the scene between Johannes and the double as in a vision. Capacius. Whatever came upon me? Like a depressing nightmare it weighs on me. Thomasius came this way. He seemed absorbed in quiet meditation. Then he stood still as if he spoke to someone, yet no one else was there. I felt as if dread fear were weighing down on me. But then I saw no more of anything around, as if asleep, unconscious I seemed, to have been drawn into a world of pictures, which I can recollect quite well. It could have only been a short time then that I sat dreaming, lost to myself. How rich, however, was this world of dreams, and ever stranger does it seem to me. I could distinctly see the people of bygone days and hear them speak about a spirit. Brotherhood, I dreamed, which strove toward mankind's highest goals. Within their midst I clearly saw myself. I felt familiar with it all. A dream? And yet soul-stirring was the dream. I know that I could never have experienced the like of it within this present life. The after-feeling which remains with me pervades my soul, as real life would do. An elemental power draws me to these pictures. Oh, could I but behold that dream again! Curtain falls, while Capasius remains standing. The end of scene 5.